All right, I got Jesse Harless on the show today. He's a professional trauma-informed facilitator and life coach, and he's an expert in plant medicine. Jesse, welcome to the show, brother.
Hey, Joe. So happy to be on. So happy to be here having this conversation.
Likewise, man. I got connected with you through some mutual friends and professionals, and I started geeking out on some of your work, and you're really not only the expert in trauma, but also, you have a really in-depth background when it comes to plant medicine and DMT specifically, which a lot of people know about DMT as the frog medicine or the toad medicine. Even Mike Tyson was recently on Joe Rogan talking about, like, this is the God molecule. Like, it's the most transformative thing I've ever done. And man, I can't wait to geek out to you on this because I don't know much about it. And I have some friends that have participated in it and got amazing results and literally said it was like, I think, talking to God. And so I want to know more about that. But dude, how did you get into this space and really deciding like, man, I feel called to become a professional trauma-informed facilitator? Like, what does that even mean, man?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think that for me, it all started with this path of blowing my life up with drugs and alcohol, 18, 19, 20, and then getting into hard drugs at 20, and then getting into a place of really hopelessness, to a place where I didn't care what was coming next. And what came next was an arrest. And that led to a whole bunch of consequences that led into, you know, sort of like a rebirth process, an awakening of what was I doing? What were these things that I was asleep to? And so that started the quest of religion, that started the quest of journaling and affirmations and the quest of 12-step meetings and sponsorships and mentors and full-time job and all-in mentality, and all this stuff happened at 22. And that sort of led into this discovery of a co-creating your life, even working for someone else. I started to realize, oh, I have more control over my destiny than I thought, from, you know, reading books and these mentors and these different places. And I was staying sober too. So I was like, okay, this is all good. This is what works for me. And eventually I got to a place where I wanted to leave my 14-year job. I wanted to do something else. And I started going down all these rabbit holes of reading and discovering and just, you know, going down these rabbit holes. And then when that happened, and I left my job, that brought me into this place of like inner work that I never even knew I needed to do. Cause now I'm here by myself. No one's telling me what to do. And I have to make something happen of my life to maintain my bills, to pay my bills. And, you know, I was single. So I, you know, in some ways it was like, okay, I had an opportunity that's pretty rare that I could do. I didn't have children. So let me do this. This was 7 years ago. So that led to this discovery of people outside of the 12 steps, and some are in the 12 steps of recovery, exploring like psilocybin, microdosing and all this stuff. And I'm like, what? I can't do that. That's going to cause me to relapse and all these things. And once I started doing much deeper work and studying like Dr. Dan Engel, and then like reading his book, and then James Fadiman's book and the Psychedelic Explorer's Guide, and then hiring a psychedelic integration coach before I did any type of plant medicine, because I was so afraid of doing it. Finally, I just, 2021, I released my book, and 2 months later, I jumped into, so here's my book where it's just about entrepreneurship, my path, addiction recovery, trauma, all this stuff, no plant medicine. And then 2 months later, I'm dipping my toes into a microdosing protocol that worked for me, which was with psilocybin. And I just was like, okay, wow, there's something here to discover. And of course, in that process was like extreme mental breakdown, because I was smashing my 15-year identity as someone who is sober in a 12-step fellowship. And now I'm smashing my identity of what that means. And to me, I'm more in recovery than I've ever been. So I'm like, this is a really interesting paradigm. And that just continued on until I get into some much bigger journeys, and which has led into what I'm doing today, which is like, you know, learning more about trauma-informed facilitation, harm reduction, mystical experiences, and, you know, doing and helping people to learn about those, especially people in addiction recovery. And I'm not just talking about substances. I'm talking about sex addiction, workaholism, codependency, all that stuff too.
Yeah, great point about addictions, because I mean, right here, workaholic. I mean, I wouldn't even think of that as a problem. Like, that's a good thing, but you're nailing it. You know, on that note of just addictions, when I look at you, I just seeing you, man, you're so put together. Like, this is a guy who's got his life under control. Like, he looks fine. I know a lot of people that suffer from alcohol addiction specifically. What would it be some advice that you would just give, like, man, you got to take this step. This would be like, what was for you, like, one of the big unlocking things that kept you from not being addicted to alcohol or substance abuse or anything else? Like, was there something that really helped you stay consistent and along the path? Because we hear so often of people just backsliding over and over again. What was it for you that really kept you consistent and of avoiding these bad addictions?
I think it was a sense of purpose. I didn't know that at the time. I didn't know. I had no idea at 22 that what I was moving towards was values and a purpose. I didn't know that. I just knew that I had really fucked my life up and I wanted to do something about it because I had to. It was forced. But it wasn't forced. I could have given up and went to prison and done all these other things, but I said, no, I'm going to go this way. Even though I didn't know the way completely, it just waking up every day and saying, do the next right thing today, help another person out, you know, have these goals for my job. That's became this purpose that started to get more clear in time and then changed because your purpose changes. But I think the sense of purpose, like a deep knowing that there's more to what I'm doing, that it doesn't just help me, it helps others, it ripples. Mm-hmm. And knowing that, like, my story of mistakes and anxiety and body dysmorphia and trauma and all that stuff, that it had a greater purpose. And so when I started to share it, because you get lots of opportunities to share in 12-step fellowships, it was like, oh, there's something more to this. I'm not going to live in this story. I'm going to talk about the story and then work on myself and work on that inner work as I do this. And that sense of purpose, even if it's as simple as like, hey, it's just for today, I'm just going to follow this like inner drive and knowing to help my kids, or I'm going to just do this thing because I want to be the best person I can be. And I want to read 5 pages of this book and whatever the purpose is, maybe it's to serve God, maybe it's to serve, you know, whatever you're doing, then that's a sense of purpose. So I would say I didn't know it in the beginning, but it was a sense of purpose and service. That's what I would say was in the, you know, that definitely today it's clear that that's what it is. But at the time,
I love that. That is so good. And because a lot of times I hear with people too is this, they don't know who they are. I don't know what my identity is. And sometimes the trauma, by the way, we're talking about trauma, is losing a job or something. You know, my story about losing a job. And then it's like, man, who am I now? I've always thought for 15 years I was this person and now that got ripped away from me. So who am I? And I see a lot of struggle with that for people too. And I think when you have that clear vision and you understand that purpose, you can form that identity. And that's really key. Like, I'm the type of person who's going to commit to this and see it forward because I have so much more to give to my family, to God, to my church, whatever it is that you're tied to, your purpose. That is so good. I love that. On addiction, something else that you mentioned that was really interesting that piqued my interest was you were talking about how using psilocybin, like, that's, man, you're rogue now. Now, dude, you jumped off the bandwagon, or is it off the bandwagon? You're an addict again. Talk about just that stigma and why it sounds like it was actually kind of hard for you to man, am I like an addict by doing psilocybin? But it was actually a whole like unlocking and a new rebirth that you uncovered after what, 15 years of being sober. So yeah, talk about that.
Yeah. So I mean, I was on the quest, which worked really well and works for people until the end of their life, a sober quest. And I was on that quest. And then I had deeper stuff coming up from the shadows because I was deep into inner work. And I started to ask questions and do a lot of education around why would I benefit from relapsing, quote unquote? And I found out that it wasn't a relapse. It was a mystical experience that could help to increase my intuition and potentially get me into trauma work. But again, I was doing it at a microdose level. So at that level, you're not going to be really getting into the deep stuff. You're going to sort of scratch the surface of what are these things for? How do they elevate your mood? But the stigma of that is like, number one, it's not legal. Number two, it's also something that is a drug. So, well, then I was like, practicing what I preach, where I'm like, hey, is caffeine a drug? Does people use that as a drug? Do, you know, it's like, are people are on anti depressants and antipsychotics, are those drugs? And then the foods that we eat, like, are those drugs? Yeah, a lot of them are not healthy for our bodies. So we abuse and we use them. And I just started to look and say, you know, why is this something, why is something so stigmatized that can be so beneficial to so many? Let me go ahead and embark in this really surgical way, journaling every step of the way, really trying to learn. And yeah, it was really hard because that first time I did a sub-perceptual dose, which I shouldn't have even felt, I had like a 3-hour breakdown, pretty much a nervous breakdown, because my identity I knew was going to be challenged to the core. And my mind is so strong, it wanted to kind of self-destruct. And then what happened is 3 hours later, I came out of that and I rose as the warrior, you know, as like, whoa. And I went to the gym and I had one of the best workouts of my life, because I realized, like, oh my God, this is a misnomer. This is a myth. And I started to realize, by me taking this path that's not for everyone, I'm going to be able to discover things that may help a lot of people. And so as I did that microdosing journey, it led to bigger journeys that showed me that, whoa, you know what? We have a really strange, abnormal society where we believe if we do these things, that's okay. Like, if I get prescribed things from doctors, or if I'm told to follow this protocol or do this type of religious ceremony, or whatever it is, like, that's acceptable. But this isn't. Why? And then I realized, like, oh, because this is raising consciousness. This is actually bringing you more into higher consciousness. And they don't want you to be in a higher consciousness state. So if I know more about myself and I unlock my full potential, that's a threat to the paradigms and structures that we live in. So that's what I started to unpack. And I started to be like, well, I'm not stopping now. And that doesn't mean I'm going to use psychedelic medicines every day. Actually, not at all. It means that I'm going to go deeper into my own full potential and unlocking. And that can look in the integration of so many different things. That could be working with an EMDR therapist. That could be working with a specific coach. That could be doing some work in the jungle. I don't know what it's going to look like, but I'm going to let it all emerge. It could be cold therapy. It could be new habit changes and patterns and reading new books. So, you know, it's really not about just the medicine. It's about the integration process that unfolds. Just like when you go to a Tony Robbins event, or you go to some personal development event, you get lit on fire. And what do you do when you get back home? You don't change anything because you don't integrate the experience. And I wanted to make sure that if people go to 12-step meetings, get their ass lit on fire, and they don't change anything. They come home, they eat like shit, they fall back into the addictions of nicotine, of coffee, and then they're like sort of coasting along, not integrating, like, whoa, I had like a deep spiritual experience I felt there. Something changed in my emotions. How do I integrate that? Well, I don't know how you would unless you had someone to guide you. So through this process, I had something, people to guide me through these unfoldings and awakenings through the psychedelic journey. And that's really what it's about today. It's about, how do I integrate what I'm learning? And I think that that gets missed a lot in our society of like a really powerful experience. And in this world of psychedelic medicines, that's so fundamental, or it is drug use. I mean, it does become drug use if it's just, you know, 15 ayahuasca ceremonies in a row, and then coming home and smoking DMT or whatever. It's like, no judgment, but where's the integration of the great beyond, or where's the integration of the shadow from when you were 4 years old and that came up from, you know, someone hurt your feelings or someone left you, abandoned you. So yeah, that's kind of where this whole thing has led, is just to a deeper understanding of how important integration is.
Yeah. That is so good. You said something that just lit me up. You were talking about just how we have been kind of brainwashed, or we've really been taught a certain paradigm to believe in with the Western approach of medicine, which is, it's so funny, because I was just talking to a client the other day, and you know, everything. I mean, from, she's got weight issues, ADHD, depression, and so she's been on Zoloft for 30 years or whatever it is, I think it. And it's really interesting, because exactly what you said, it's just mind-blowing to me. Like, we are told, like, this is acceptable, and we don't even think about it consciously anymore, because we're just like, the doctor said this, I'm going to do what he says, even though there's no proof that this is actually going to help or work. Matter of fact, they tell you it's not, we can't promise anything, and you might even have side effects like suicidal ideations and all this stuff, but people, we just willingly do it because why? The doctor said so, and there's this paradigm that that's good for me. And it's really interesting. So I told this client, I said, I don't know if you know this, but there was just like this huge like landmark study that's like 30 years of like studies showing that SSRIs did not do nothing. They did do absolutely nothing. And the whole serotonin theory about happiness was wrong. And it was just kind of a hunch that they had. But we've been prescribing people Zoloft for 30 years off of this theory. And she's like, I had no idea. I never heard of this. I said, I just want to give you the information. I'm not telling you to just go off Zoloft, like work with your doctor on that. But going back to what you said, it's just so interesting. But yet something like psilocybin, where we're seeing these powerful results. And I had another podcast with the Zenchronicity sisters, which I'll have to connect you to if you don't know each other, but they're experts on psilocybin as well. And they were telling me the powerful effects of neuroplasticity and being able to rewire with psilocybin. And so we're seeing these great effects. Can you talk at all about the neuroplasticity or just the rewire? Was there anything you were able to rewire that you felt, and maybe it's more of an integration using psilocybin that you noticed like, man, I was quickly able to like tackle something that I didn't even know was there maybe because, you know, you weren't even conscious of it and it helped you kind of see this consciousness and make you aware of it.
Yeah, I think like just to kind of back up a little bit, like some people come into this space of using psychedelics and they stay in the 12-step fellowship and then it becomes this thing of like, I have to keep that from that because that's going to not mix well together. I had already jumped ship from that world and that world served me incredibly well. I still have so many friends from that world. But when I did that, I, you know, there's a saying like you can't understand something till you leave it. And once I left it, I started to understand what that was doing for me. That community, that fellowship, I understood what it was doing. So when I was embarking in this now realm of implementing a microdosing protocol very intentionally, I realized like I'm going to need some of those principles from that fellowship in my life to be able to feel connected and have community and be able to share openly about this like I would about not drinking in that fellowship. So I started to realize that during that process of a journey of microdosing. But what I really started to notice is that my perceptions were off about a lot of things and about addiction and the phenomenon of craving and these things that are talked about in a disease model of addiction. I started to question it because I didn't have any of that happen. In fact, I wanted to do less of it, especially when to a deeper journey. It was like, who would want to chase that? It showed me my childhood trauma. Why would I want to keep doing that? It's like relationship medicine. Why would I want to see where I'm not holding space for my mom? And that's what this was showing me during this journey with psilocybin. So I'm like, God, if anything, I want to stop doing this. It's showing me the truth of what I'm ignoring. So I started to just be like, what else is here? And then in that place of discovering that, of course, like they don't even know exactly how many processes work in science or in the brain. And we kind of theorize and we have peer-reviewed studies about how things work. Well, in this space of psychedelics, we're still uncovering like what's happening in the brain with what's called the default mode network and sort of shutting that down so that we can get to the deeper capital S self, like the deeper self, like who really am I? Who's the watcher of my thoughts? What is really in this great beyond that is here for me? And as I was doing the smaller journeys, I wasn't accessing that. I was sort of accessing like elevated mood and more confidence and more like people, I know people who microdose psilocybin in California, they can just go down the street and get it. It's not illegal to just go buy it. And they got off their Adderall. They got off and it's worked great for them. And some people that may not work, but for me, I wasn't doing it because of that. And there's no doubt I have some ADHD. I was just like, I'm just like, what's the truth here? And as I continued the protocol, I noticed an elevated mood, confidence. And you could even say maybe that was just placebo because you are now creating this new character, this new person that was losing his old identity and building. I don't care. It felt like it was happening and neuroplasticity was occurring because there was new thought processes. There was new relationships. Like one of my closest friends said to me, when you dive into this world and break your old paradigm of all this belief of the way addiction works, you're going to open up a whole new realm of people and possibilities. And boy, was he right. And so that's what started to happen. And that raise my consciousness because now I was hearing different ways of Gabor Mate's take on addiction and different ways that addiction can come about that is like normal. Addiction is normal. that is like a normal part of the human experience. And I think that to normalize it, instead of making it just be the fentanyl addicts or the drunks or whatever, it's like, dude, we all have some type of proneness to addiction in this society. So yeah, of course there's like neuroplasticity, shutting down the default mode network, but we're just barely unlocking what meditation does in the brain. We're barely unlocking what breathing, deep breathing does in the brain. So how are we going to know exactly what psychedelics do and what they do in the brain? Well, we don't even understand the full capacity of the brain, what's possible. So I'd say, you know, as I get into the bigger journeys of psilocybin, that's when I started to be like, whoa, now I really know about something shutting down, let's call it the default mode network. And then working with other medicines, I noticed other changes and what happened with my fear response, like the amygdala shutting down, and having this space where it's like, whoa, my body's not responding to my thoughts right now. It's like I'm all connected in this wholeness space to share openly with these trained guides, to be able to get into this deeper places I've never could get in therapy. I mean, I was in therapy for well over a decade. I am a therapist. I have a clinical. So it's like, I understand that and it's amazing. And I love therapy even today. It's just the point is that with the utilization of psychedelic medicines in the right container with integration, there's going to be success. Just like if someone gets sober and they find a mentor and a recovery coach and they have structure and purpose, they're probably going to stay sober. So it's just having all these different keys to success is what really helped me to stay on this exploration path, which has been over 3 years of exploring in this new place of recovery that is a place of discovery utilizing medicines as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. And it's going to be cool because you can help so many more people, I feel like, now, because you've done it all. You see, you've done the therapy side, you've been in the addiction side, the AA side, you've been in the psilocybin side, and now even in this new realm of DMT. So it's so cool. I feel like you could reach so many people because you know you've lived through all those stages and you can meet them where they're at and then show them other ways possibly and maybe speed up their process, which is just really cool. All right. I want to jump into DMT, man. I'm very excited to learn. And I think a lot of people are too. Like, first of all, like, what the hell is it? This toad medicine, the God molecule, what is it? And talk about just your experience and what led you to say, I want to take this next step. I want to jump into this. And I know how you feel about it. We've talked before. It's a very sacred practice. This isn't just like a party drug that you like, you smoke and like have bliss and go see God. Like, there's a whole sacredness to it. But yeah, talk about DMT and just your experience and what the heck it is.
Yeah. So how I got to the place of even thinking about utilizing what is called 5-MeO-DMT, which is a little different than DMT. The reason I got to that place is because I had done other larger experiences under therapeutic settings to understand what happens when you have to fully surrender in these experiences. So I traveled to Costa Rica and did big medicine experiences with ayahuasca and peyote. And I had these huge moments where I totally had to surrender and had to go into these processes that were like almost like a death process. And I had to surrender to that. And after having these big experiences, it's sort of like the law of attraction. Eventually, my consciousness could either choose to get the hell out of there and just live my normal life again, or how far does this rabbit hole go? What else is here for me to see on this side of this mystical experience side? And also for the deeper inner transformation work of the trauma and the stories and the wounds that I just hold on to that I make part of my identity. So I had this like deep desire to know, and that led to being introduced to some folks that were utilizing 5-MeO-DMT, which I had knew nothing about. And I had eventually met that at a small amount, a very small dose, but it had such a profound effect. It blew me away that this type of medicine, 5-MeO-DMT, which is 5-methoxydimethyltryptamine, and you can just research and look it up. This particular molecule at even a small dose brought me to a place. And by the way, I was with two trained guides who were actually certified to do this work when I chose to do this medicine. I got so far with it in such a small dose. I said, why did source, God, creator, whatever, put this on this earth? Like, why is this even here? This is unlike anything I've ever done. And so I got really curious, and that led me to finding Five Training, which is 5-MeO DMT, Information and Vital Education. So the acronym Five, people can look it up, Five Education. And they have put this whole year-long training to be a trauma-informed facilitator of this medicine. And of course, it was in Mexico because it's a scheduled substance here in the States. So I did this year-long, you know, 42 live classes, 2 weeks in Mexico, all in training to be able to understand what was happening. And we're still learning what happens in this 5-MeO-DMT experience called the God Molecule, which is like this really big experience, depending on the dose you meet it at, which is why never do this medicine without trained guides. Make sure it's in a place that it's legal. And then also that you're actually getting integration support big time after the experience, because it can be destabilizing to meet God or become God or have that experience and then go back to your car that needs an oil change and then come back to your, you know, credit card debt and come back to the normal stuff that's happening. It's like, what the hell? Like, I don't want to come back to this. I want to go back to that space. So to have that integration of how do I take this massive mystical experience, maybe the biggest there is, and bring this into, maybe bring this into my life. And that's what led me to, you know, finishing that training last year to get to a place of understanding of how that medicine can be utilized, how it can be served in a very safe setting with principles behind how we keep people safe, harm reduction. And, you know, because there's this, and people who are wondering too, like, well, did you do Bufo or did you do the Pure Molecule? And I've never done Bufo, which is Bufo alvarius, which is the molecule that comes from the toad directly, because the toad is in many ways endangered and there's an over harvesting of the species. So there's a way to use the Pure Molecule, which is pure 5-MeO-DMT, which has, you know, exactly how much you're getting, and there's no neurotoxins that you'd get from the toad. So, you know, anyone who's curious, as many, many people have done podcasts and can learn more about that, about the differences. But I can just tell you, from my experience, the Pure Molecule is safer. So if someone's interested and they're like, well, where do I meet this God Molecule? You know, there's places like Tandava and Tepoztlan, Mexico, and you can reach out to Joelle in Victoria, and there's other places, but those are the places I trained under based off my guide saying, these are the people you want to learn from. And so, yeah, so it's kind of where I'm at today is like, wow, one day when psychedelic medicines become legal therapeutically, which is what MDMA is looking like it's going to become by next year, you know, I want to be in a place where I have some experience with these medicines and what it's like to experience them, to have integrity, to speak to that experience, but also to have served them in Mexico and in different places where I can. And, you know, so that's kind of where I'm at. It's more of like, there's people dying right now. There's as many people dying today from opioids alone as like a 747 crashing every day. That's how many people are dying just from opioids, as if a 747 crashed every day. We have to look at new approaches, and no one's going to be one person that's going to change everything. But I just want to know like what's available, what's out there for people. And I think that psychedelics and the way they're kind of coming back and the way they are, I think it's really important that we become educated. And I just chosen to do that. And that's probably part of my nature. Being an entrepreneur is not for everyone either. And it's like a psychedelic experience. It's the great unknown. It's the great uncertainty. You have to surrender at times. So I think I just kind of followed this path of like, oh, this is the next thing that emerged, and trust my gut that this was right for me.
Yeah. This 5-MeO DMT, how would you describe the experience? And, you know, again, people are saying this is like, I've heard people say after doing it, I believe in God now. Like I saw God, or that's why they call it the God Molecule. And that I've heard people say, man, I just felt like water. Like literally I like looked at my hands maybe and like, I was water. I was that or whatever. So I'm just curious for you, like what was, if you could describe some of the experience, if you're allowed to, I don't know if you're allowed to, but if you could describe for people like what it was like, and then how were you able to take what you learned from that experience and integrate it? Because you've talked a lot about integration. And so how were you able to come back and integrate it into your life so that you are a better, more fulfilled human being living in an even more higher version than you were before?
Yeah, it's a great question. So when I had some of the bigger experiences with the medicine, you know, you come offline completely in that medicine where you have this ultimate opportunity to surrender or not even have a choice to surrender because it's such a big experience and what's happening in your brain and what's happening with that molecule. So having an experience where, you know, I was told like, hey, do you want to taste the orange or become the orange? That's kind of like what it's like. It's like, do you want to taste it or do you want to become it? And that's what it was like at these bigger experiences with proper pre-integration and care. Because if I was just piped 5-MeO-DMT on a beach and just let, I don't know what would happen. It could be completely destabilized or it could be beautiful. I don't know. But I did it in a really structured way with two trained guides just to hold massive space so that when I went offline and I came back, I was slowly piecing together this massive mystical experience of like, wow, all this faith I had in the Christian church growing up that was definitely forced upon me. I didn't choose from an early age to do that, but it was just thrown down my throat. And I was like, okay, like I believe in something. And that thing I was praying to, now I actually experience what my faith actually was or is. Like now I've got the taste of like, oh my God. And I still can't explain every single thing. If someone wants to try to explain that, you know, they can try to read Tryptamine Palace and see what that book tries to explain with this molecule. But, you know, I do my best with trying to, explain that experience is like trying to experience, it's like, how can I explain becoming all that is that I've ever prayed to my whole life? And I think that experience can be really, really profound and beautiful and just big, deep cries and big, deep catharsis of all these things I'm holding on to. Like even my body, you know, I came into this world with like a smaller body, like smaller bones, and I didn't have a lot of muscle. So I'd have to work really hard and eat a lot of protein to really put on a lot of muscle mass. But like, I also was accepting the fact that like, I like this body. I don't need to put on 50 pounds of muscle to be happy. And then in these big experiences, it's like a cosmic joke. It's like, oh, it doesn't matter if I put on 15 or 50 pounds of muscle. What matters is I know that I am unconditional love. Like love is all that really matters at the end, like service, love, surrender to these processes. And in the meantime, we can put on this costume and we can have all these goals and go to Tony Robbins conferences and go to church and do all these things. That's so important because we want connection, community, but like to be actually an experience where I'm becoming all that I've ever prayed to and all that I've ever had faith in. And it's really, it can be profound to be like a reset and a check-in to like, what do I really want? And you know, without integration of that with integration therapists and or integration guides, I think it can be a really, really challenging experience. So to describe the mystical experience at that level with 5-MeO-DMT is like, it's kind of challenging because you can even have a big experience like that and it looks a little different each time. And that's why, you know, anyone who gets cocky about these medicines, like be careful, they're very humbling. And I think that the, you know, the biggest thing is like, it helped me to take stock of not taking myself so serious, to slow down my mannerism, slow down my rushness of life and, you know, take a pause and really enjoy this connection with people and nature. And, you know, for me, some of the biggest things is the synchronicities and in nature and eagles and hawks and things I see all the time. Which someone would just say, well, whatever, that's random. But to me, it's like, I don't think so. I think there might be a little bit more to this. So it just solidified my faith. It solidified, I don't have to like justify it. I don't have to like read 50 books. It's just like, it just is. And that's the isness is what came about from those bigger journeys.
Yeah. Wow.
It just sounds so profound. I think, like you said, I was just taking that all in. It's like, what a really just deep you walk away with just such a more clear understanding of, like, I think where you want to be, where you want to go. It seems like you just got a lot of clarity, and that's wow. And that's powerful.
I want to add one thing, is that, like, this is not for everybody, because I can tell you, once you go there, you can't go back. So once you go to that place where you had that experience, there's your life before 5-MeO and your life after 5-MeO, these big experiences. It does have that big of an effect, or can, that it's like, to step into this realm, you have to be prepared for the integration of a lifetime that you're going to be stepping into. And I just want to make people aware of that's why I am hoping for, you know, the legalization in a therapeutic sense to happen, even though there's going to be a lot of regulations. I just want people to be safe. And I want people to realize, like, when you step into this realm, there is the before and after. And that is a really big deal that maybe doesn't get talked about, is my life was very different before I met this molecule. And my life now is it looks different. And because when you see what you've seen, and then you've seen it more than once, and then you're coming back to integrate it, I can't lie to myself. I can't lie to other people. I can't do the things I was operating at any level that I was operating before without feeling this feeling right in my sacral chakra that I am completely disowning myself from what I've experienced. And someone could argue, what if that was all placebo? What if you were just high on medicine? It's like, well, that's for you to decide when you have your own experience in this lifetime, if you choose. But for me, it was enough and is real enough to be like, all right, like, do I want to continue this path in my 40s as, you know, an unlicensed therapist, a life coach, a professional facilitator? Do I want to go this direction? Do I want to read more books? Do I want to write more books? Or do I want to do something completely different? It really is that big of a change that is like, it doesn't mean your whole life's going to blow up, but it's going to make you really question who are you surrounding you with? What are you doing here? And you have no idea how much time is left. So it's like, what do I really want to be doing? And as soon as I get away from that and I go back to this mind character, the mind character of who I think I am, I get in trouble very quickly now, where before I could live in my mind for 7 years and create a whole character of who I told you I am. As soon as I start getting into that now, it's like I get a sickness in my stomach. So I have to keep resetting back to this, like, who am I? Who is Jesse? What does that mean? And without really getting tripped up about it. But I can tell you what I think it is. It's this relentless pursuit of this constant surrender of what I think is happening and what I'm surrendering to in the now moment. And sometimes that can be really exciting, where it's like, where's my next client? Where's my next opportunity? Who can I serve next? And other times it's just pausing and listening and just taking a pause and seeing what's happening. But for me, it's chasing this, I don't know if chasing is the right word, it's following my internal compass, my inner guide, no matter what, even if at the end of the life cycle, this was not the right path, I don't care. I'd rather trust myself and my intuition, as I've done all this work to seek to why I had anxiety, why all these things are happening. I'd rather follow that and then go, hey, you know what? What a ride. I followed my internal compass, than someone telling me what my internal compass should be, how it should look, how I should save money, how I should do all these things. I think, like, for me, I'm in this, like, great mystery of life, and that's really exciting. And I don't have to, like, live in that fear that I was in before. As much fear. There's still fear, but just less.
Yeah. So interesting. It sounds like you just came out of that experience so much more grounded and centered and clear. And, you know, you read about some of these yogis or Nisargadatta, some of these metaphysical teachers, they will say things like, you're just a spirit. You're not even your body. Your body is just a flesh suit, and you're not even that. And it sounds like you walked away, like, really with this clarity of, like, yeah, that's true. Like, none of this stuff matters. You even said, like, this cosmic consciousness, like, you would just laugh at that. Like, we're all laughing. Like, you actually care about that in your body suit? Like, you're nothing. You're a spirit. Like, you'll live forever. So it seems like you really walked away with that. I mean, it's really, really interesting. And that you're able, and that even now in the integration factor, you're able to kind of pause again and be like, what's really important here? But it seems like you're able to, like, do it very quickly versus maybe in the past, like you said, you'd go down this path for 7 years, just being like, I got to get succeed. Maybe, you know, I'm thinking of the typical entrepreneurs, because you and I are about that. And it's like, I got to succeed. I got to crush my competition. I got to go, go, go. I got to work. You know, Whereas it's like now you're like, do I? Like I need you can kind of question yourself a lot quicker and see what really matters. That's what I'm getting from you, right? Is that right?
Yeah, yeah. And you know what's funny is like when I left my job in 2017 and I went on this path that was like no one was going to support that path except my fellow entrepreneur friends that understood and my coach. And other people don't understand like why would you leave a stable career and do all that? And I had someone leave their job around the same time. And then into the entrepreneurship journey mix of all this stuff, and then meeting these psychedelic experiences, I started to be like, whoa, maybe I am on the wrong path. Maybe I do got to kind of switch this thing up to really get to my center of where I could be of most service to people. Where can I be of more of use on this planet? And that caused me to want to go back to work as a therapist and go back to like, maybe I should be that and still run my podcast. And what's funny is some of those people early on that I followed are now becoming police officers and they're going back to leaving the entrepreneurship journey. So I'm like, it's very interesting. And I think that's okay that you have these like periods where you kind of question it and you go, maybe I'm supposed to be doing this, not that. And I think that's okay too. And I've done that quite a bit in the last, I would say 8 months where I was like, you know what? I think I'm going to become a therapist. I think I'm going to still have clients and still coach people and still go on this consciousness quest of learning more. But, you know, it doesn't bring total clarity, but it brings like an inner peace that everything is going to work out no matter what. It's like a knowing, like it's going to work out. Life is happening for me, not to me, and get out of the victim consciousness. Cause even as an entrepreneur, I played in the victim consciousness quite a bit. And so now I'm like, hey, I'm trying to really see myself for what I really am in this moment right now. And to me, that's just someone who's in this bodysuit that's living this, you know, choice of co-creating my reality and seeing what I've seen and kind of just how can I go from here in this body at this time with this level of consciousness to serve people. And sometimes that's not super clear of what that is. And I think that's okay too, to sort of surrender. But I think that the inner compass that I have of service and helping and that mission of just like, I want people to be able to have some compassionate conversations around addiction and mental health and know that like, it's going to be okay no matter what. That's kind of like where I've centered into. And I don't know what that's going to look like 6 months or a year from now, but I'm okay with that too. So living in that great unknown of really testing my mystical experiences that I've had in my faith, it's certainly been tested to the max. And I think that's really where I know the work has paid off is, you know, I could have no money, I could have no job, I could have no things happening and still be okay. And then come out of that and go, oh yeah, but everything is okay. And be able to get right back into lighting people on fire and helping people in the ways that I do, just like we all do.
Yeah. It's one thing to say it, but to actually know it, understand it, and believe it, like what you're saying, like to have that assurance, like that is powerful. So I think it's really cool what you're describing. I think if anyone's listening, I can see, especially I just think in the entrepreneur world is we're just so driven to succeed and do things and achieve. And man, that would be a really nice thing to be like, no, this is okay. Like I'm right where I need to be. Like that's something I say to myself all the time, but I don't know if I always believe it. You know what I mean? So I think to actually believe it and embody it, that is completely different. And that just to me is calming. I mean, you calm me down as you were saying it, my nervous system relaxed. Mm-hmm. So I was like, wow. I'm looking at the top of the hour. I know we have to like wrap things up. And I feel like I've got so much more to ask you. So I might have to just bring you on for a part two. Cause I really wanted to talk even more about, trauma and just kind of some more things, but, quickly, you know, if someone is listening to this podcast and trauma is something that you're a specialist in and they want to see what it would be like to work with you, I'm just curious, like, I don't even know how you work. How could people learn about more about what you're doing and how do you typically work with people? Is it a 3 month, a 12 month, or what does it look like to work with you if they're interested and they've got some stuff they want to resolve?
Yeah, it's typically a 3 month journey. I take people on a 12 session journey and that would be meeting them wherever they're at, even if they're not on an exploration of psychedelic therapy, that they're on an exploration of consciousness. And maybe they're an entrepreneur that's like burnt out and they secretly do have addiction, sex addiction or codependency, or even like whatever, painkillers, whatever they're doing, people usually come to me in the in a quiet sense, and they don't share that they're working with me because we're doing work that they're not doing with other coaches or people. They're doing some deeper exploration of like, shit, I do have an emotional addiction. I do have this addiction to depression, and I do have to, and I'm already doing antidepressants and all this stuff. So I sort of work with people to kind of come into those like gray areas that are like, damn, this isn't straightforward. And people work with me for typically 3 months and then sometimes for years, depending on who it is. The other work I do is professional facilitation inside of drug courts, professional facilitation to mental health centers, our recovery community organizations, like whole systems that are tied into addiction recovery. And wherever addiction recovery is today, whether that's an abstinent model, whatever it is, it's just coming in and helping people to have more conversations worth having so that we don't hate each other. We're not burning each other out at work and hating the people, hating ourselves, and then not serving the people who need the help the most. And so I work with organizations to do that as well. So it's between, you know, professional facilitation and that sort of coaching, integration coaching, trauma-informed coaching that I work in. And you know, today it's people typically work with me for 12 sessions, 24 sessions, depending on when their next guide or coach or whatever is coming up for them next.
And Jesse, do you typically, will this process of coaching, is it optional to, or can they do plant medicine with you as well throughout this process, or can they opt not to? I don't even, how does that work?
Well, so people typically have a lot of questions about that, and then I'll guide them into the right places depending on where they are in the country or if they're even in this country to do that and meet that in a really, really intentional way with lots of information and ways to do that, since that's what was my 1 year training was about. And also my psychedelic integration guide, what they were about and their information and education that they provided. So really helping people make a really informed decision about that. And then they can for themselves find a way to safely do that. And so, yeah, I will help people guide them into that process to keep them safe and to make sure that that's what they really want to do. And if it is, then there's many ways to do that. And, you know, some out of the country is most of those options, but some people don't care and they're going to do it anyways, and they're going to want a guide. And if that's the case, well, then I'll give you all the information I have to do it so you don't get hurt. And I think that's really the point, is like people are doing this stuff anyways. So we might as well give people education so we can reduce harm and create these structures of care and a safe container for them to do it.
Yeah. Amen to that, brother. Man, last but not least, I know you got some exciting projects that you're working on. You want to just kind of tell people what they can expect from you, and then just let us know where we can connect with you if they're really resonating with you in this podcast and they want to connect with you offline and just learn about all the things you're up to. I want to know where they can best find you on social media or your website or where.
Yeah, I think if you want to learn more about me, listen to my podcast. The podcast is called Entrepreneurs in Recovery. I bring in a lot of amazing guests. Joel, you're going to be coming on my podcast soon. So we're going to have amazing conversations. I haven't done any solo casts. So if you're listening to the podcast and subscribe, I'll start doing some solo casts. I'm really getting into like the next phase of my work, which to me is like heart medicine work. I really want to get into stuff that's really coming from my heart and not, you know, there's a lot of people I alienate and isolate because they use the word addiction. As soon as they hear that, they run for the door. But I'm trying to make the conversation that it's all of us. Like all of us have some form of behavioral, emotional, substance, food, sex, work. Something is there that is probably not helping us live our best life. And so I would say come check out the podcast and follow me there. And that's really where I'm excited to go and revamp and change and discover as I'm like almost 30 episodes in. So,
yeah, very cool, man. Jesse Harless, thanks for coming on the show, brother. Appreciate you so much.
Yeah, thank you too, brother. Much love.
Much love.